25 years ago, on March 15th, 1998, the Miami Fusion kicked off their opening game in MLS's third season, becoming one of the two expansion teams in this ever-growing professional league. While the Chicago Fire would win the U.S. Open and MLS Cup double in that 1998 season, getting all the attention in the process, the Fusion would quietly grind, grow, and build over the next few years until finally putting forth a dominant Supporters Shield winning season in 2001. This team, led by Ray Hudson, played fast, loose, and exciting soccer. Alex Pineda-Chacon, Pablo Mastroianni, and Nick Raimondo were just some of the memorable names on this roster. This progressive playing squad was bested only by a young Landon Donovan and his San Jose Earthquakes in the Major League Soccer playoffs that year. Despite putting together one of the best seasons in MLS history at that point and arguably since, MLS made the decision to fold both the Fusion and their Florida neighbors, MLS original franchise, Tampa Bay Mutiny. While MLS soccer has returned to Miami in the form of David Beckham's Inter-Miami, much has been discussed of what could have been had the Miami Fusion been allowed to stay and build. Indeed, what would a Miami Fusion look like in 2023? This podcast tells the story of the Miami Fusion through the voices of those who actually lived it. 25 interviews across 25 episodes charting the good, the bad, and the unbelievable. My name is Joe Shaw, and this is 25 for 25, the story of the Miami Fusion from those who lived it, a Detox production. Join us all season long as we explore this unique slice of American sports history.
This is a great sports event. This is the best ticket money can buy in South Florida. And it rocks. It absolutely rocks.
After playing several years in the lower divisions of U.S. soccer for a team called the Long Island Rough Riders, you might think that is all your professional career will amount to. And then something interesting happens. An American domestic professional sports league, Major League Soccer, sets up shop in 1996 in the aftermath of the 1994 World Cup hosted on American soil. Jim Rooney took that opportunity and ran with it. Playing for the New York, New Jersey MetroStars, now the New York Red Bulls, for his first couple of years before joining this iconic Miami Fusion franchise that we're talking about on this podcast, quickly becoming an established locker room leader and captain for this Fusion team, Jim Rooney provided a veteran presence, a professional head, and a calm and sure demeanor to steady this incredibly energetic side. Jim joins us today for the first episode in what will surely be an incredible series on this podcast as we look back at the Miami Fusion 25 years later. Jim shares some interesting stories, including one of the worst coaches he's ever had in this game, that infamous sports bra moment at the 2001 MLS All-Star Game, and what a 2023 Miami Fusion team might look like in MLS today. Join us for Chapter 1 of 25 and 25, You're the Worst Coach I've Ever Had, featuring former Miami Fusion captain Jim Rooney.
Sort of your perspective, your time with the Fusion from the time you're there. So did you join, maybe let's start here. So the Fusion kicked off in 1998. Did you join them during the 98 season, or did you join them in 99 the following year?
I joined them on April 1st, believe it or not, because there's a bit of a story involved there. Long story short, I had been with the MetroStars the season before, and we were going through preseason and the whole nine yards. And I just got to the point, like, I forget when it was. It was the last time to, you know, set your rosters. And we had Bora Milutinovic come in. So here I am thinking, oh, this is going to be great. Four World Cups. I loved Alfonso. He brought me to the club. But, you know, as a player, you know this happens as sad as you are. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this guy's coming in, and it's going to be great. You know, he's four World Cups. I mean, he must know everything. He comes in, and, you know, and that season, you know, I led the goals. In the city. I did pretty well for the MetroStars. So when he came in that preseason, he kept putting me, you know, as an extra player or wherever. And so I started seeing him. I went up to him after training, you know, 2 weeks. I says, "Hey, Bora, you know, what's going on?" "No, no, no. I see you here. It's early. It's early." And it was the same thing the whole time. So what ended up happening was this went through the whole preseason, and 2 weeks before all this happened, I basically went in there and said, "Listen," I said, "I need to be traded. You'll get some value for me, whatever." He goes, "No, no, I see." I said, "Listen, you've done nothing but lie to me since I've been here." And I said, "I came to you as a man." And I says, "You know, you don't like me. That's fine." I says, "I think you're the worst coach I've ever seen in my life." And he tried to pick up the thing. No. And he was surprised. And I says, "Are you?" And honestly, I have to thank the assistant coach at the time, Mo Creed. He was in the locker room at the same time. And after that, it was one of those things where, hey, Miami wanted me. And I went down over there. And Nick Megalutis was assistant coach at the time. And so he knew me. So that's where I was picked up from then on in. I can't even remember if it's 99 on, but it's just weird how things happen. You just think that, you know, I mean, here I just wanted to compete, and he wasn't letting me compete.
Yeah. What was it like for you coming from, now obviously MLS is still pretty new, right? They launched in 96. This is just a handful of years afterwards. But what was it like coming in from a quote unquote established club, meaning they've been doing this a couple of years, into a truly MLS's first ever foray into the expansion market? What was it like coming into a market that was truly new in that sense?
Yeah, you know, they had a history before, and you know, I was a Cosmos fan before, and they had Fort Lauderdale Strikers. So
that's true.
You know, as players, we kind of, you know, and they were our rivalry. You know, we didn't like them at all, the Cosmos fans. So as a matter of fact, I used to give Ray Hudson problems over that, you know, when he was coaching. But you know, so we knew that the fans were there, and it just. You know, as a player, when you're involved, and I was involved with, don't forget, every player at that time was involved with, you weren't just a player. You're part of the community. You know, prior to this, you know, before MLS was USISL. And for Long Island players, every one of us players, we all coached a local team. And what that did was get to know the other clubs, and we spread each of us out, and then all those kids used to come and watch me play, and that was basically the idea of it. So we all were doing that kind of stuff. So, and we had a good idea of what worked and what didn't. And you know, when a lot of things I noticed at the beginning were, we had appearances at Sedano's Marketplace, I believe it was called, and it was a, you know, a Spanish grocery store, like a Publix, or we'd go to Publix, and I'm like, there's no soccer fans. They're going to give us, let's go to the tournaments. Let's go to where the soccer people are. And slowly but surely, when the right people got in, unfortunately it was at the very end, and we built up momentum, but it just wasn't, I believe they had their mind made up towards, you know, contracting us there, but we knew the fans were there, and it was excited, and it's just, you know, they didn't kick off in the right way.
Yeah. So knowing what a hotbed Miami, I mean, we've seen, I mean, even now, right? So as we're recording this, it is MLS's 28th season, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they just had a huge kickoff weekend across the slate. So many teams, so much coverage in the media landscape. And the fact that you see Inter Miami, right, have such a huge presence in the market, and the involvement with David Beckham, Phil Neville. They had Joseph Martinez come over from Atlanta. Prior to that, they had Gonzalo Higuain. And so taking a look at what they've got now and thinking about where they were when you were involved with them, and then even going back further with NASL, what do you think the league did or has done differently this go around that they weren't willing to do back with the Fusion?
I think the biggest thing they had is they what they have now is belief as an owner. Whereas in the past, it was, you know, let's be honest, it was a bit of a long shot in certain aspects on how big they want to grow this. You know, our home stadium was Giants Stadium. You know, I believe I remember hearing at one stage just to put on the lights and have security for the, you know, parking and everything, it was like $100,000.
Yeah.
You know, so, and these are not our stadiums. So I think initially what really saved us, obviously, is Anschutz, the big guy, but also like the crafts. And what really saved us, I believe, is are those big sports guys who, no matter what anyone said, they believed in it.
Yeah.
And I think we were very lucky in that regard because, you know, even up in New England, when I went up there to play, I mean, the stadium, everything. I mean, Jonathan Kraft, when you met him, he was really into it.
Yeah.
And he really wanted. So when you meet people like that, you see it and you see what they build. I mean, we've asked a lot of questions as players. And, you know, he was always willing to answer. And I think MLS really got lucky with the people that initially got involved. And I think they did a really good job, especially Anschutz.
Yeah.
Because they were able to hold on. It's almost like, you know, any stock, you know, they held on. And, you know, that's to me, because, you know, when I go to the games now, I mean, it's totally different. You know, it's, you know, you have no time to think. They're shooting off things, and just the announcements and walking around. You know, I went to an Orlando game with my daughters, and, you know, they're sitting there, and my daughter looked and said, "Oh my God, Dad, you played this?" You know, kind of thing. And I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like this, but it was something like this." Yeah. You know, it's come such a long way. And the greatest thing for me, you know, because the guys my age, I'm 54 now.
Right.
Guys my age, you know, we weren't looking to make big time money. We were looking, you know, we were always playing in the leagues regardless of the level. We just wanted to play at the best levels as long as it made sense money wise, you know, because a lot of, you know, the beginning salaries weren't that great or even survivable.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things I really believe. You got to give credit to, you know, just certain guys. And, you know, listen, people could say anything they want about Don Garber. Don Garber really made this thing roll to what it is now. And he's made a lot of right. Listen, he made a decision on Tampa Bay and us. But, you know, the funny thing is Dallas is the team that we had heard prior to that was going under.
I heard that too.
What ended up happening was they built Frisco. That was in the worst. And so from there, that's when everything kind of changed. It was Tampa and them because they were the only two league-owned teams.
Yeah.
So
that's right. Because the Hunt stepped in to buy Dallas. Because at the time, Dallas was also a league-owned team. And that's why I think there was the chatter about Dallas getting contracted. But then at one point, you talked about Anschutz and Kraft and then Hunt. Hunt had Kansas City, Columbus, and Dallas all together at that point. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, and like you say, the Hunts, forgive me for not, I mean, those three, I mean, him, really Hunt and Schutz and Kraft.
Yep.
I mean, you really got to hand it to those guys. And listen, those guys were big time sports people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that really helped. And, you know, look where it's gone on from there. Yeah. All to them.
Yeah, definitely.
Really.
I want to wind the clock back a bit and let's go to 1999. Let's party like it's 1999, if you will. And let's talk.
Oh, I did.
Let's talk about. So it was. You know, it was. I want to pause for a moment and talk about. Just for half a moment, you talk about going to the Orlando game and what a spectacle that was. I went to Q2 Stadium in Austin during their inaugural year. Because I wanted to experience. Now, I've grown up Dallasite, Dallas fan. I was at the Cotton Bowl. I was at South Lake Dragon Stadium. I was at Frisco Stadium. I mean, I've been all over the Metroplex. And at our height, we could not get to the level that Austin was at in that year one. I mean, it was unlike the only time I'd experienced that level of intensity and spectacle. The only thing close was when I went to see a Millwall game in England. I mean, that was as close as I got.
Yeah.
And it's wild. It is not the MLS of yesteryear. That's for sure in a lot of respects.
Yeah. And like I said, you see that stadium and the, you know, the production. I mean, there's no expense spared now. Mm-hmm. And like I said, they deserve it all. And, you know, the best thing about it is, for me, as a former player, I mean, just we never had that youth academy attached to a pro team. And to me, I often see that, and I think of the young kids that actually can see that. I mean, I even saw it from the Cosmos, and yet there wasn't a league. I still dreamed it.
Yeah,
you know, and here you have young players that really have an opportunity, and it's a great thing to see.
Yeah, it really is. Especially, you can see the partnerships with the school districts. You can see the partnerships with the communities, and you have teams like Dallas, right, or even Charlotte, actually selling homegrowns before they even make the first team, just based on pure talent and potential alone. It's incredible. It's totally different. Going back to 1999, when you joined the Fusion, you're part of the Fusion. At this point, the team has been around for a year, so it's had a moment to gel a bit. But I wonder, what was it like for you coming in at that point in time? I believe, was Carlos Cordoba still the manager at that point? And then he left.
No,
he had left at that point. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I came in 98. Came in when Ivo Wortman came
in. That's right. Okay, so what was it like coming in for Ivo, coming in under Ivo, and then sort of getting acclimated to the team, and then eventually assuming that leadership position?
Yeah, well, first you mentioned being acclimated to the team. I had to get acclimated to the weather.
That's true. Going from New York to Miami.
Yeah, I came in and you know, 9 a.m. and we're running around warming up. And I remember the sun felt like it was right here on my head.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I was just saying to them, I said, we training this every day? And they're like, oh yeah, brother, here we go. And it's like 2 weeks until you really get to know your body, you know, what you need, water and, you know, all that stuff. But it was so hot going there. But the one thing I would say, Ivo was an excellent coach.
Yeah.
You know, from going where I was from, you know, to me, you know, Bora Milutinovic from Metro Stars, he was more of like when the cameras were there, he was on. He knew his stuff. But as far as that goes, you know, it was different. So when I got to Ivo, he was so organized. We'd come in, everything kind of made sense before. Cause, you know, as a player, you walk in and, you know, you want consistency in the sense of, you know, what I need to do to prepare before I go on the field.
Right.
And it may not be the same as my teammates, but once we get to a certain, you know, it gives you that time and you're ready to go, everything just flowed. Our water breaks, everything was good. The problem is him and Carlos Valderrama had an issue.
Right.
And back in those days, you know, it's a big problem. And then slowly but surely, then the pressure kind of built. And we ended up trading Carlos to Tampa, and then things were going good, but then things weren't going good. And then he just changed a little bit from the pressure. And, you know, we had a night game and we gave out sunglasses the day before. He was wearing the sunglasses at night.
No.
You know, we were calling him Corey Hart. And, you know, it's just, I mean, you just seen what pressure kind of did to him, you know, and he lived in the same apartment complex. He was an unbelievable guy, unbelievable coach, everything. It's just the timing of everything that was going down and then the pressure of doing good. We had to do good. So once we got rid of Carlos, you know, who do we replace him with?
Right.
You know, it's difficult
from
there. So, but getting into the team, I felt kind of refreshed because it was very different because we had a lot of young guys like Leo Cullen, came in. Pablo Mastroianni, first year guys, great. Turns out they had great careers, but at the beginning, it's tough, especially when you know, I can't tell you how many games we had where we had goals being scored the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes of each half. And when you're with young players, you're focusing on that. And that's what kept happening. Oh, we'd lose last 5 minutes from a mistake of, but we were young. And, you just saw it happen and we worked hard at don't give it up. Don't. And the more you do it, the more it happens. So all those things kind of happened all at the same time. And then, then in comes not as early, but then in comes Doug Hamilton, and then with Ray Hudson coming in, everything kind of settled down. Because one of the other things I want to, mention is the biggest thing I remember early on, like, we need to get a Haitian player. Everybody said we need to get a Polish player because there's a lot of Polish people in Chicago. I mean, that was the kind of thing where, I think a lot of teams are focused on that. Whereas players, I mean, our best team, we had every nationality you could possibly think of. You just need to have, I mean, we had Colombians, we had Yugoslavs, Irish, we had English, South Africans. I mean, Colombians, everything, Hondurans. So it doesn't matter. You just have to get the right players. And at that time, it was kind of like we need a catch to for the people to come in. No, you need to win. You need to win. And that's, or at least show that if you're not winning yet, you're on the word, you're working hard.
That's a really
So.
good point that I don't think enough fans of MLS now. I was talking to this one guy the other day and he was like, I've been a fan of MLS forever. And I'm like, oh yeah. He's like, 10 years. I'm like, man, you weren't there in the bowels of the Cotton Bowl with crickets going, literal crickets hopping over the empty seats because there were so many empty seats. Like you're coming in 10 years ago. That's a lifetime, right? But thinking about back then when MLS was trying to get, like you said, a hook into the audience who didn't know any of these leagues or play like this league or these teams or the players. And so I remember, for instance, Hugo Sanchez was a huge like promoted player here in Dallas, right? And they specifically had Hugo Sanchez here for that reason. And then he was here and gone, here and gone. And they were like, but we gotta replace him. Who are we gonna get? Who are we gonna get? And then I remember when Dallas got its best seasons was when you had the right players, regardless of nationality, that were working together and gelling together. And then they created sort of this identity, this team identity, that then you could go out and find players that fit into that identity as you're going into the transfer market. But
But now think about it. Oscar Pareja. No one heard of Oscar. And he comes in and he changes the whole thing, and look at the career he's having now. I mean, that's just, you got to get the right guys. You got to get a good teammate guys. It's very difficult, because at the time we had to bring in the stars, right? I get that. The problem is we didn't have the money for the other guys. It just becomes difficult. And then you see, as players, we understood certain guys got preferential treatment. It is what it is, but it's still that way now. But it does, for us, it doesn't matter. It just gets to the point where they had a hook, and now you don't need it anymore. Back then, you did a little bit. You got to be fair. I mean, look at Peter Nowak for me, and Marco Echeverri. I mean, I had to play every time. I always look at that. Once they came over midfield, they were my responsibility. And playing against those guys, I mean, I just tried to get them angry and hit them and do our thing, let them think of me, and I used to be able to do. I could never do it to Peter. Peter Nowak was one of the, like, I mean, I can't tell you the things that Echeverri called me. Everything. But Nowak, he just had this way of throwing his elbow and he'd catch you. And then after the game, he'd love it. He'd say, great match, great match. You know, he loved the physicality because he knew what I had to do.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't take it personal, you know,
right.
But I mean, he was unbelievable. Those kind of guys, that level of player,
yeah,
we hadn't seen. And that's those players are the types of players that we needed. And we started to get after that.
Right. I mean, you bring up Peter Nowak, and it made me think of, he's not the coach of Philadelphia now, obviously, but Philadelphia right. Union here in the 28th season, 2023, they almost won the Supporters Shield and MLS Cup both last year. And they started out, you know, all these previews, who's the big name player on this team. And Philadelphia, the headline is like, you got a bunch of hard working blue collar guys, right? And no real mm-hmm. names, a couple names here and there, right? Andre Blake, goalkeeper of the year, a couple names, but no real names. But the identity is that they work well together. They gel together. They're unbelievable as a team. And then they go out and just stomp the competition on opening day. And you can see how well-oiled of a machine they are because they're mm-hmm. all working together. And that is the evolution of where you want to go. And that's where you get the leagues that are the top leagues that have a few players but are exciting to watch because you've got these teams that are just ripping and roaring in so many different ways.
Yeah. And it's funny that you mentioned Philadelphia because when I watched the games this week and when I saw them, I wanted to see them. And again, just see how you know, if you look at their lineup, they're playing a 4-4-2 and a diamond.
Yep.
And it's shows like that, and it's different. And that's something different where that used to be the way it is. Now everyone's 4-3-3, 3-5, you know,
yep.
what it is, 3-4. And it's just, and you see the way they play, they understand every aspect. I mean, to beat that team, you got to play a full 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's one of those, I mean, they have a great goalkeeper with Blake.
Yes.
You know, you see those. I mean, it's just, those are the guys that, I mean, we don't really know them,
right?
You know, in a sense, all over the place. And even the guy, what's the guy? I watched the Austin game.
Yes,
that's center forward.
Trusi. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what a talented player. And to me, those are the players. And, you know, I think MLS should be just like what it is now.
Yeah.
For the likes of players like Almiron.
Yes.
You know, it Absolutely. Moves on. If you get that reputation, we could sustain the league and we could become some. But for now, that should be a major part of it because, I mean, I don't think people realize, like, in America, it's almost like the last frontier because
right.
Europe's tapped out everything. And realistically, American players are not expensive.
Right.
You know, Weston McKennie is now, but prior to that, going over to Germany, he's not.
Right.
Yeah, you know, so if you do your homework, and that's what I'm saying, with the leagues here, MLS has become very important.
Yeah.
Well, for teams all over the world.
Yeah, and you give players like Almiron and Driussi and even Pepe here in Dallas before he went over
yeah.
to Europe, the opportunity to play in a high-stakes environment with the mm-hmm. lights and the glitz and the glamour. Sort of, I don't want this to sound insulting, but sort of with a safety net, meaning mm-hmm. you get a little bit more of an opportunity to recover and make people forget when you have a bad game. Whereas mm-hmm. you see things like in the EPL, where if you make a mistake, you have a bad game, you don't get many other chances to make it
yeah.
right. Like that's about it. So it gives yeah. you the opportunity to hone the craft in a way that a very few leagues can give you nowadays.
Right. And this is the thing for me. I mean, if you really listen to it, you'll see it too. I mean, you have to remember we're still Americans.
Yeah.
In a foreign game in their minds in a lot of ways. If you just watch the likes of Christian Pulisic playing for Chelsea and he takes a shot and it goes over the bar. They say, oh, he messed up his stat, you know. But if Mason Mount does the same thing, it's, oh, he's just unlucky.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I had a little time going, you know, over in Europe when I went to the Metrostars. I wanted to play. Back then, they didn't really have loans or anything like that. So I wanted to go and train. So I ended up training and playing in Ireland. And, you know, that's not even a good league, and they just think that they could have come over and played.
Yes.
You know, it's just, we just don't have that respect right now, even now.
Yeah.
The more respect we should, guys like Tyler are changing that view.
Yeah.
In England. But, you know, and it's not helping with the American owners. Chelsea's doing bad.
Right.
They just don't like it. You
right.
know, when it's yeah. the Americans are involved, you know, because we watch the Premier League and, you know, that's what everybody wants to do. And listen, our players are good enough.
Right.
They just need the opportunity.
Yeah.
And this is why the MLS to me is so important, because a guy like, remember, Carlos Bocanegra, he played 4 years fully.
Yeah.
And he got it under his belt, and then he went over to Europe. And that, to me, at least, you know, if you're starting in the MLS and you got to, he did 4 years. It was a different time, but even if you do 2 or 3 years, you're going to get playing at the right time in the right age of your development to understand. And then if you want to go ahead.
Yeah.
But I think that's the real benefit of us. And the other benefit of the MLS is making all the other CONCACAF teams better.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's true.
We're killing ourselves as well. And it's the same thing in Europe too, with
yeah.
England, you know, all the best players are foreign players.
Right.
And they wonder why England's not doing so well.
Right.
You know, yeah. it's the same thing for us.
Yeah. Going to the 1999 season when you were there and playing with the Fusion, I know from a statistics standpoint, y'all made the playoffs, but what was it like? I fondly remember 1999 in my mind, right, as the year of Jason Christ. That was the year where he topped the Golden Boot race with Stern John and Roy Lassiter. But what was it like for you playing against some of these prolific strikers on the team in Miami? And at the time, y'all were well, every team had kind of middling attendance, but trying to keep interest locally and also keep results tight on the field.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing that everybody doesn't seem to understand. I mean, everybody's aware of
yeah.
what's going on. Maybe we're not aware totally. Like even for example, that last year, you know, you just heard rumors, but it was what. You know, even the second year, you know, you got people coming in and the owner trying to talk to you and blah, blah, blah. And seeing that it's a young team. And, you know, I'm looking around my locker room and I'm seeing young players. And we had like seven
yeah.
really young players, you know. So you have to give those guys time. And you know that, you know, for me, I knew at the time I was still trying to fit in myself. They were just trying to figure out way what's the best way for us to stop the bleeding,
right?
Really. And you know, it got to a point where no matter what we did, it just didn't work. It wasn't for a lack of trying. It was just, I think, you know, knowing now, inexperienced players. I mean, Echeverry's, you know, caught Jeff Cassar out on a 50 yard, I think it was the goal of the year,
yeah.
50 yards out playing. We were up for a corner getting ready to score and he scores. I mean, every little thing like that. I mean, we were on the blooper reel.
Yeah.
You know, there's just nothing you could do about it.
Yeah.
And it was just a very trying year. And it was just basically, okay, we never thought that, you know, it was going to go, but we just have to try and keep continuing to get better and get better. And then there's frustrations of not starting. And, you know, the funny thing is that people don't understand at the time. When you had players that remember the college draft and
yep.
all the players that played in the ACC, if they got drafted because ACC was the best kind of conference at the time, all those players had an attitude like, well, I played the ACC, so I should start. You know, I should be playing.
Right.
And that was a bit of a problem. We had a couple of those guys and we had to sort those guys out, you know, because of complaining and, you know,
yeah.
all these little things that, you know, everything was so new, you know, I mean, the professional side of the game, you know, now we say, hey, these are the professional standards. Now you're talking to a kid who went through college, say, for example, Clemson, the whole, you know, goes through Clemson and, you know, assuming it's the best level, I should be starting. Now you have a guy like me that played probably 7, 8 years prior to him in the lower leagues before MLS and the ethnic leagues in New York City. And, you know, so when you hear stuff like that in training, you make sure he's going to hear you, you know, and you go after him, you know, physically and everything. So there was a lot of that learning for players and just foreigners to come around, you know, just melding. It's very, you know, it's very difficult. It sounds easy,
right?
But it's hard, especially at the time. And now you're talking about, so for, say, for example, one of your high paid players is not putting out, doesn't whatever he does. And then you have the same guys coming in all the time, making low money. It's a problem.
Yep.
You know, it's just like your regular job. Now it's changed.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it's proper. But, you know, you got a guy making $30,000 and this guy's telling him something. He goes, okay, let's go to the parking lot. Let's sort this out. You know? Yeah. It's a little different in terms of that. It's much more professional. But I remember that team at 99, everybody was trying, and with the right attitude, just things didn't go our way,
right?
No matter what we did. And like I said, Evo was, I mean, so organized with coaching. And then it just, you know, the pressure just kind of gets to it. And, you know, from there, everybody's talking. And then back then, we even had boards back then, the boards, meshed boards. And then, I mean, forget it. It was done from there.
What were some of your early memories in, or just memories in general, maybe that year or the next year, of the travel in MLS and the any Open Cup games? I mean, something I was trying to explain to somebody the other day was how someone would take a cross-country flight, right, New York to LA, in coach, and be waiting to board with just regular, you know, class, like boarding class 7 or whatever, right? Like just tossing your bags in and get going. None of the private flights that we see today, none of the shuttles, which I'm glad we've grown in the thing, but just like people can't seem to wrap their head. Wait a minute, this isn't minor, this is professional. So what was the, or major, right? But what was the, what memories do you have of just the travel in general in this league?
I absolutely loved the travel in the MLS because at the time, don't forget, I used to travel by bus.
Right. Oh, yeah.
In the lower leagues, and we stayed in some of these hotels that you wouldn't even believe, you know. And there was one time when we were prior to MLS, it was like a crack hotel. It was, and our general manager said, we can't stay here. It was the Knights Inn in Baltimore. Like, we can't stay here. So it was, and you know, we used to play games from Long Island to North Carolina on the Friday, and then drive from the Friday and then play a Sunday game, or sometimes even a Saturday game, and then from a bus, then take that bus back to Long Island. And at the time, I was working construction in Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
So I was working and then playing, if you want to call it professional, you know, it was really semi-professional. I was making $3,000 a month,
right?
You know, for them. And so I was like, this is great. You know, I'm on planes, you know, and the hotels were great. You know, I mean, we walked into the Sand. That's the one thing we always stated. The hotels were always, we walked into the San Jose hotel. I was like, this is great. You know, so that didn't bother me. Right. It's just those, the amount of times that, you know, it's tough to play for a team like Kansas City, because no matter where you go, you have two flights.
Yeah.
So, and people don't really realize that. And I'll be honest with you, I always had a difficult time when we flew from to play in San Jose. I don't know why the San Jose, it was just that 3 hour difference, you know. And the problem, like, I was not a great sleeper as it was. I go to bed at the time, especially late as it is. And then once you have that time, you can't get to sleep properly. Mm-hmm. So all those things come into play. But I mean, for the most part, our travel, It was, like you said, it wasn't anything special. It was like how I take, if I'm gonna go on vacation now, it's the same thing. It's just you have much more, a lot more friends on your team. I mean, and to be honest, we had a great time flying. I mean, if you, to be honest with you, that is the one thing. If you ask any player, what do you really miss? I mean, because yeah, you miss the games and stuff, but to play the games, you got to prepare. And like my ankles towards the end, you're so sore and you're hurt and what have you. It's really the camaraderie of the guys. You're just around, and I mean, I remember being in the airport in Atlanta, and Duke was playing the national championship game, and we were sitting in TGIF's, and I think it was something like a TGIF's there, and we wanted to see the rest of the game, and we had to board. So then all of a sudden, over the loudspeaker, it comes, "Hey, we'll give you a $500 voucher if you know the flight's overbooked. $500 voucher." So we heard that, and we're like, "Wait a second, we could stay, watch the game, have a couple more drinks," because it was after. "I think I'm going to take it." So I walked over to Ray and said, "Ray, any changes that we have no training tomorrow, whatever you want to do." Sure enough, we all did it. We watched the game, saved $500 out, and we came home the next day. I mean, those kind of things, like spur of the moment things, just hanging out with your pretty much your best friends, guys that you're really, it's not just hanging out with your friends. It's you're doing things with these guys that you'll never do with anybody else. Competing, fighting, they understand what you're going through, and your ups and downs, and even your if you have family issues, what's going on. It's those are the things, because you never get it back. You don't talk to guys as much as you obviously do when you're in it. And those are the things you don't realize you're gonna miss. And that's the biggest thing for us moving forward. Just the friendships involved.
That is something that I think is so key and important is that camaraderie, and you can really see it, especially on the field. You can tell when people have got it and when they're merging well, and you've got that chemistry. I want to shift gears then and talk about the 2000 season, which was a bit, it was less successful on the field. However, there was a key change in the coaching staff middle of the year that would define the incredible 2001 season, and that's when Ray Hudson ended up coming onto the team. So we talked a bit about sort of the sunglasses at night, as it were, of Evo. But what was it in 2000? Miami had been around for a bit. Attendance was continuing to dip. You're probably hearing the rumblings. People were talking about, is the league going to contract? What is the league going to do? How are things going to move? I mean, and let's put this in a time box for folks. So Miami and Tampa Bay were contracted in 2001. There were no expansion teams 2002, 2003, 2004. And then 2005, you get Real Salt Lake, and I want to say both Real Salt Lake and Chivas USA, who later got contracted, entered the league. And then again, no real growth for a couple years. And then we've got Seattle in 2009, and then boom, we're off to the races with all these expansion teams. I might be misremembering if someone came in 2006, 7, or 8. I don't
I mean,
think so, but
Toronto came in
you're right.
2010.
2007. So actually, Toronto did come in 2007. That's what it
Yeah.
was. I'll never forget Danny Diccio getting that opening goal,
Yeah.
his big bald head.
Yeah.
And but yeah, that's right. So thank you for that. So Real Salt Lake Chivas came in 2005. Toronto FC came in 2007. Seattle came in 2009, and then that's when we started having. And then Vancouver and Portland came 2011. Boom, 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 boom. So that's right. So there was no real growth as far as those expansion cities yet. We had the contraction, and then just sort of let's hold everything. Let's hold the stock, right, as it were, as you're talking about, until we can continue to grow and grow and grow. But hearing the but coming back to 2000, hearing the rumblings, hearing maybe trying to figure out like how can we continue to grow the team, coaching turmoil, Ray Hudson comes in. I want to ask you sort of as a leader of the team at that point in time, What was your mentality when results aren't going the right way, Evo leaves, and then Ray comes in?
Yeah. And the funny part about all that, when that was going with Evo, because prior to that, things were coming in the paper, and Evo had said, you know, some players had said something in the paper, and he had some problems with it. And then the next day, 2 days later, Evo said something about the players in the paper, and the players had a problem with it. So there was all sorts of, that's how tense it was.
Right.
You know, and it got to the point where, you know, Ray was our television announcer, and he used to sit behind me on the flights. And that's how me and Ray became friends,
right.
You know, just talking, you know, he'd ask a couple of questions here and there, and we just became friendly and blah, blah, blah. But the thing with Ray was so positive. I mean, that's the biggest thing about Ray. Listen, we know the shit's falling, you know, crumbling down. Yeah, we're fucked. What are we going to do? You know, and it comes to the point where, listen, there's only one way out of it. You've got to stick together and go on from there. Look, let's play football. Mm-hmm. Regardless, let's play football. Ray had, you know, Ray prior to that, which most of the players we wouldn't know at the time. I mean, Ray was obviously, when he was hired, he was the community. This is unbelievable. He was the community, what was it? Community director. And basically what Ray was doing at the time was going to all the schools, right? Doing appearances. And he would, you know, a big assembly. And so we'd go as players every now and then. That's how most of the players knew who Ray was.
Yeah.
He was the community director. So we would do things with, you know, elementary, and we juggled the ball, and then Ray would come in with the teacher. And I'll never forget his big thing was, he says, okay, yes, we're doing that. And he goes, wait, hold on a second. And, you know, he'd have little kids come up. And then he goes, okay, you kids are doing great. And the pros are doing great. He goes, hey, does anybody want to see if their teachers can do it? You know? So he had them heading a ball, right? Teaching them how to head a ball, to throw it up and do all this. So then the teachers come up and all the kids are screaming, get the kid teachers up, you know?
Yeah.
So now he has a line of like 8 teachers. And he did this all the time. And all of a sudden he'd go, and, you know, obviously we're working with a Nerf ball.
Right.
You know, for the little kids, you know? And so all of a sudden he goes, wait a second, before we do this, he goes, kids, what do you want the teachers to do? Do you want them to do them with the Nerf ball? Or do you want to use the really hard one, you know? And then that just erupted for the kids. And now the teachers are throwing the ball, and, you know, they're hitting their nose the whole 9 yards. That's who the young players thought who Ray was. Yeah. They didn't know he was the, you know, the former player, the icon. And they realized real quick when he became the coach, they announced his name was way louder than anybody else's.
Wow.
He was like a rock star the first time, you know, coming out. I mean, it was unbelievable when he took over, you know. And, you know, that fed the belief of the players, you know, like, hey, these fans really love this guy. Let's hear what he has to say. And Ray was so genuine.
Yeah.
You know, he's the player. He's a player's player. And he's like, listen, I mean, honestly, when he had signed Ian Bishop, you know, Ian Bishop was the big player, and he comes in, and I noticed in the midfield, Ian kept going back. He was signed as the attacking midfielder. So Ian would get the ball off of the center backs, and I would just say, you know what, Ray, he tends to like to get the ball off the center backs. I go, there's no point me and him both back. I go, do you want me to push up further up the field? And he goes, all right, whatever you want to do, whatever you think is good, you know.
Yeah.
And if it made sense, he was all for it. And the only thing that Ray said to each and every one is, he goes, listen, you have total freedom on the ball. And he says, the only thing is when it breaks down, he goes, you get your ass back as soon as you can in your defensive positions. And that's it. You know, no questions from me. And it was as simple as that, you know. And it got to the point where our trainings, As it is, when things aren't going back one day. I should say to you, when he did get the job, he come to me and he made me the captain. And he had said to me, "Listen, a lot of things are going to go on, and a lot of things you may not understand." He says, "But I'm going to have a go at you in front of other people." And he goes, "And if you say one word back to me," he says, "you keep your mouth quiet, just take it." And I was like, "All right, in a normal conversation like me and you are having that, right? That's no problem. I can accept that." Now come to halftime when things are not going well. And there was one game where, in fairness, Preki wasn't on,
That's right. Preki was playing
and
for the Fusion at this point. Yep.
and Preki wasn't on, and Preki was a great player,
Yes.
but when he wasn't on, he was so frustrated, he kept doing the same things over and over again. So I just had a pop. I said, "Hey, all right, Preki, it's okay. It's okay. Back. Just play it back." And Preki's like, "No." And then Preki's yelling at me. So I'm like, "Are you serious? Come on, Preki, just play it. It's no big deal, But you get to the locker room, and I'm like, "Okay, Ray's gonna sort this out." And I thought I played pretty good, and at the time, and get into the locker room. And he's going on about, and he walks in, he goes, "Preki," he comes up, he goes, "Preki, okay, lad, okay, no problem. Just keep it going. I know it's fine. You're doing fine." And everything. And he's praising everybody in the locker room. And he looks at me and he goes, "And you sharpen it up," right to me. I looked at him like, "Huh?" And he goes, "I told you to sharpen," and he ripped into me, "Sharpen it up. Shut your mouth and get your. Sharpen it up, or else you get." And I was so, I'm like, is he kidding me there? He's gonna take it out on me here, really? And so I was like, "Okay, and what happens?" Chris Henderson comes, "Don't worry about Rhodes Pitch." And everybody's sorry, it's all right, Rhodes, let's go. Went out there and it changed. We ended up winning the game. Changed. He just knew he could yell at me and I could get away with it with those guys, because me and him had just such a great relationship. It just worked in the sense of he's just an honest guy, and you just felt he just wanted what was best, not only for the organization, but more importantly for the individual player and as a group. I mean, there were things that people don't even know, like players had an issue, and he found out about it. He goes, "I don't want to see you for 4 days. Get out of here." And he went for 4 days to sort out his family and came back. All he said to us was, "Listen, he's not going to be here for 2 or 3 days. That's it. Okay, yeah, no problem." No one asked questions. And Ray just has the human element of knowing where to touch. He just does when it comes to a football player. He knows the game inside and out when it comes to that. And like I said, once you see that, we knew things were getting better. And it just, between Doug and Ray leading us, we're like, "Listen, this is our best shot. These are our guys." So as players, honestly, it was very easy to follow Ray.
That's incredible. That really does shine in the player's coach, right? And then the human element. Because at the end of the day, we've all got something we're struggling with or we care about or we're carrying that is outside of the game. And so to be able to see that and be able to reach in and connect with each of the players on that level, it's too unfortunately rarely seen in a lot of respects. I think we're seeing it a lot more now, in different ways, but it definitely took a while
And
to
that's
get here.
the thing that, what people think of Ray Hudson and, his quotes, and he's a great TV announcer and he has all those stuff. I mean, honestly, he's a wordsmith, and the things he thinks of, he loves the poetry and all this kind of stuff. Complete opposite of me. And he just also has that human feeling for us.
Yeah.
You know, he just knows what to say at the right time. And, you know, for soccer players, you know, but he doesn't like X's and O's. Like he always used to say to us, I'm not into the X's and O's. Like he never did a training session for us, really.
Wow.
It was John Trask. He goes, look, they'll do it. He would walk around and, you know, see what's going on. And, you know, one day he came to me and said, hey, you know, we had a rough couple of games. And he said to us, he says, listen, if anybody, how are you feeling? I go, I'm all right. I'm good. He goes, all right, if anybody's hurting, he says, just let me know. We'll see. So we did like a little rondo for maybe 10 minutes. And we came back and, I walk around and I came up to Pablo. And Pablo Mastroianni was the fittest guy on our team,
yeah,
in the sense that, and he would, hard worker, just everything, just a real honest player. And he says, my hamstrings are a little sore, ruins, and I'm a little tight. So I, no big deal. I said, all right. And I walked over and I said to Ray, he says, everything good? I said, yeah, you know, Pablo said he's a little tight. He goes, okay, that's it. Guys, going for the showers. That's it. Training done. That's it. Those are the kind of things he did.
Yeah.
You know, because he was tired. And then you do things like that the next day, everybody's at practice.
Yeah.
Everybody's ready, raring to go, and everybody wants to play.
Yeah.
I mean, he had those little things. And forget the X's and O's. It's the other things that he had as well. But he doesn't get the right proper, you know, even during when we were playing there, they're like, yeah, but he's just this right now. Ray's a good manager.
Yeah.
Very good manager of people, and he knows the game.
I think that's a good segue into the final season of the Fusion, the incredible 2001, the winning the Supporters Shield, which I don't even know if it was technically being awarded at that point. It's retroactively given, or if they had started officially giving it out at that point.
I remember we received the Supporters Shield.
Okay.
I remember them saying that during that time.
Okay,
so,
cool. I couldn't remember. It was somewhere in the 90s, yeah, where it started, and I couldn't quite,
yeah,
remember. So, okay. So, but winning the Supporters Shield, best, for those who are not familiar, the best regular season record across the league. Having all of this dynamite energy, incredible goalkeeper by the name of Nick Raimondo, who joined in 2000 and it really came into his own in 2001. And I'm just going to pull some stats. So for that particular season, it had 16 wins, only 5 losses and 5 draws, mm-hmm, and an incredible plus 21 goal differential, more than anybody else. Chicago came second with 20, but just absolutely. And this was, I forgot about this. This was back in the wonderful days of the Eastern, Western, and Central conferences back,
yeah,
then. But you had Alex Pineda-Chacon, Golden Boot winner,
yeah,
with 19 goals. So you had the Golden Boot winner. You had the Supporters Shield. You were all over the place. Unfortunately, the MLS Cup didn't come out because y'all dropped it to the Earthquakes in the semis. But mm-hmm, what was, and Donovan's led Earthquakes is what I should say at that point.
You mean you should say MLS led San Jose.
I should. You are absolutely,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah. Since it's 25 years, I can say it now.
MLS wanted to make sure, right?
Hey,
the golden boy with the golden hair.
You can't argue with them now.
Yeah. No. Got that MLS Cup.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of moments I want to key in on that. But actually, so before we even start on that, let me key in on that since we're talking about Donovan. I will never forget the image of the 2001 MLS All-Star Game. Jimmy Rooney gets a goal, does a Brandy Chastain celebration. For those that don't know, taking the jersey off of the sports bra underneath, iconic at the 1999 World Cup winning penalty kick goal. He did the Brandy Chastain celebration, and then right after that comes Landon Donovan mimicking Jim Rooney with the exact same celebration. I'll never forget it. So mm-hmm, I want to key in on the All-Star Game. What was that whole planning like for you?
So that whole thing just came about. Like, you, everybody thinks like it's a big plan. This was an All-Star Game weekend.
Right.
Back then, Ray told us to have a good time. Really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so we did, you know. And what happened was we were at the skills competition beforehand, and I was in the shooting exhibition. And at the time, it was Mamadou Diallo,
Oh, yes.
me, and John Spencer. Remember Johnny Spencer?
Yeah.
So we're there, and Brandi Chastain sits in San Jose. She is basically doing the MC of the shooting competition.
Right.
So while she's talking, we're waiting, you know, they're getting set up. You know, we're saying, oh, that's her, you know, and just, oh, okay, that's her. And Mamadou Diallo has no idea who she is. And so we're like, really? You know, you have no idea, you know, World Cup spending is like, listen, World Cup on their knees doing the whole thing.
Right.
And he's like, I do not know this woman.
Cover of
We're like,
Sports
oh, geez.
Illustrated, everything. Yeah.
Everything, right? So, you know, then we're making fun of him because he's from Africa. I says, you didn't see it in the African paper, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we get to the point where Spenny just sitting there just says, you know, wouldn't it be brilliant if one of us did that? And I just said to him, get me a bra and I'll do it. And he said, he just looks at me seriously. And so from there, we kind of forgot about it. And then I won't, this won't give it out. But while we were there, you know, you have people taking care of you. There's agents and people working for MLS. And this one girl, you know, we were talking about it. We were laughing. And then she goes, you know, because they were there all weekend too. She goes, you know, I have a sports bra. So then from there, I says, really, can I borrow it? You know, we joke.
You're
Next thing
right.
you know, we get it. And so it was just that. That's all it was. It wasn't this big plan.
Sure.
You know, I've heard people saying that I was doing it to honor Brandi Chastain. I mean, I'm not that deep.
Yeah.
You know,
Right, we
I
just talked
wish I
about the
was.
lack of poetry, right?
Yeah, I'm not that deep. You know, and like, listen, she's great. She looked great at the time.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah.
And so it got to the point where, okay, here we, and then we were just training and just talking about it. And then all of a sudden, Ray and Doug Hamilton says, listen, I don't want to know anything about it. And they just kind of took off. But the problem, I didn't realize. So it was on ABC, and they mic up a player on each team. And they asked me to do it. And I was like, really? So here I am, this guy's miking me up. And I'm wearing a bra. And he's hooking up and he's just shaking his head just like that. And now we got a score, you know,
Right.
like the rest of the players are kind of feeding us and everything like that. I had absolutely no idea Landon was doing anything. No one knew. And that's, we were just, it was just our thing. It was just a little joke. And then when I did it, you know, the funny thing is Clint Mathis was there and Benny. And they were, Clint was injured at the time. He says, when you do it, you run right over to me, you know, because he
Yeah.
was the first one to greet me on the field.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those in amongst the guys,
Yeah.
we thought type joke.
Right.
And then also we do it. And then we've seen Landon doing it. And I remember Timmy Howard, now that you mentioned Timmy Howard, he started yelling, you can't do that. What are you doing? I had no idea he was going to do it. But this was my story. And then after that, you know, little did I know, I was being interviewed from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, asking me about why did you do this? Did you do, you know, I could, you know, you can't tell the whole story,
Right.
really, you know, what's going on. But it's, I had no idea he was going to do that. And to be honest with you, if he would have scored first, I would have never done it.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Sure.
You know, just at the time. But it, you know, it was just a fun thing that just kind of things, you know, we never even thought about it. You know,
Yeah.
just joking. Bunch of guys just saying, hey, let's have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Not thinking it's on ABC.
Right.
You know, we weren't that, we didn't get the good training in, I guess.
That's incredible. Well, the 2000 that season, right, memorable for many reasons, one of which was the All-Star game moment. And we talked a bit about Ray and what I love about how you were talking about. I remember this. So I as a young kid enjoying soccer. So I grew up playing hockey, but soccer was my game that I enjoyed purely as a fan. Yeah, I played a kick around game, you know, growing up as everyone did, but I didn't play it the way I played hockey. And so for soccer, I could really just obsess over. And so even as a young kid, not really know anything about the X's and the O's, not know anything about the Dutch total football of the 70s, right? Just watching MLS, because that was the only thing that I was watching growing up, and seeing how Miami played in 2001 was unlike anything I'd ever seen before. And it really was the almost reckless abandon of you can just go wherever and then you haul ass back and play defense. It's like all offense and all defense. It's like back and forth. And I don't want to quite call it the same idea as like the total football of the Dutch, but it was a similar creative freedom mentality is almost what it felt like in a lot of respects.
Yeah, and it was one of the, you know, if you, well, if you see Ray, when he announced his favorite teams are all, he's not very English.
Yeah.
When it comes to football in terms, because he likes to play the passing style and he just loves that, you know. And that was our, you know, he used to show time just, hey, if it's not on where you want to go, just keep it moving. Keep it moving till it gets to the right places. And listen, just keep it moving. Once we get into their half, you know, then let's show the magic. I don't want to see any magic in our own half. You know, let's show them and keep the ball and get in our positions. And we were very comfortable knowing that we could keep the ball because we just had, you know, we had Preki, we had goal scorers. And the funniest thing about, you know, Alex Pineda Chacon, I mean, he was considered, people don't know, and we didn't know this at the time, he was considered the Pelé of Honduras.
Oh, wow.
Before he came over. He was 10 years at Olympia, and he was a goal scorer. He played for Honduras national team. He had a great name, the whole nine yards. So, when we signed him, I remember Ray, we were waiting on him coming, and when you see him, he's like this big.
You're just holding up your pinky finger, yeah.
Yeah, he was tiny, right? And the thing about him was, we thought he'd be a bigger guy. Right. I mean, listen, I'm telling you, he looked like a high school kid. So, like, with no muscle tone, no nothing. And so he came in and, you know, obviously, remember I told you how, you know, yeah, he's from Honduras, but the South Florida heat's a different level.
Right.
When you're training. So we were getting him in and we're like, well, you know, he was struggling for so long. And then what happened to us, because we had a bit of fortune, and this will explain a little bit, you know, of it. He came in as like sort of like his big signing, but preseason we're like, no, he's not strong enough for this league. This is not going good.
Right.
You know, he needs to adapt here a little bit. So if you look, the first couple of games, he wasn't starting at all. He came, and usually when you first get in, I want to say fourth to fifth, definitely around the sixth game is when he started starting. So he missed the first couple of games, and he still scored the most goals in the league.
Yep.
And while we were training, we weren't sure about him. And we were like, well, I don't know. You know, this, he's not doing anything even against us. So we put him in and, you know, preseason, nothing's really going, you know, whatever. So then, you know, you sign him, put him in for the one game and he scores a goal. Next game, Ray puts him in, scores a goal. Does it again. So at one point, Ray says, I mean, I don't think he's ready to start, but he keeps scoring. So what the heck are we, you know, we gotta go.
Yeah.
We gotta go for it. And the thing during that time, he spoke very little English. And do you remember that saying? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Sprint.
Yes. It was singular for a bit. Right? Now it's Sprint. Yeah, yeah.
That one guy, that's the one thing I think of him. That was his first English words. He'd just come into the locker room and he'd go, you know, hi, fellas. And we try and teach him joking around, you know, make fun. All of a sudden you just heard him say, hey, what'd you learn? And he goes, can you hear me now? You know, it was the commercial.
Yeah.
You know, so from that, we're like, oh, this guy's a great guy. You know, and from then on in, what Pineda Chacon had was an unbelievable personality, the nicest guy you'll ever meet, and he was able to fit into spaces where Diego Serna at the time, Diego was a different player because he was bigger, stronger, and he was a little different. But Diego liked to be the man too. You know, that ego that he had. But it was funny because he was such a good player and a good guy. Diego didn't mind. I mean, that's the dynamic that you have.
Yeah.
You know, for a little, and it pushed Diego to score. Well, if he scored, I'm going to score.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because prior to that, to be honest, you know, we had issues with Diego. Not just, you can't blame old Diego.
Right.
It was just finding a partner to play with.
Yep.
You know, and to be honest with you, even when I play with Diego, sometimes the first 5 minutes, you give him the ball, and depending if he gave it back or did the simple thing, you knew you were okay. If he tried to change the play of attack by himself, we knew we were in trouble. He's mentally he's a little off. Mm. You know, he's not following the plan, and
right. You
know. But this is what happened. They both helped each other so good because Benita Chacon was such a good guy. Everybody wanted to help him.
That's awesome.
You know, to survive here, and Diego, we just had just an everything kind of went the right way.
Yeah.
You know, it was like Ray signed the guy, but we didn't think he was going to score 20 something goals and lead the league like he did. And honestly, if you see our faces every time he scored, we were happy, but we would look at each other like, can you believe this shit? This, you know, it's like, holy, this guy's not, this is unbelievable.
Right.
You know,
right. Whatever
we do, this is working, you know? So, but like I said, we just had it going, and we all trusted each other. If I gave the ball wide, I knew it could come back.
Yeah.
I wasn't worried about it.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing amongst the teams. I mean, just look at Man City now.
Yeah.
All those great players, they flow the ball. You know, if you get one guy that's feeling it, it could disrupt the whole thing.
Yep.
And we just – and what did we have? We had a leader in Ray that demanded it, and everybody listened to him. That was his demand.
That's
the difference in coaches.
It's yeah.
Demands. What do they demand and what they let players get away with? And the biggest thing, you don't like to bring these up, but our first major issue we had was earlier on this season in New England. And, you know, it was two players, our main players, and he suspended them.
Wow.
As much as it killed him, he suspended them right away, missed the game. They begged him not to do it. He says, no. This is the way it is. I'm sorry. You did it, not me. Mm. Those are the things people don't know about Ray Hudson.
Yeah.
You know, he knows how to run an organization. And for me as a player, when you see that, yeah, it's my friend that got it. But you're like, hey, he's right.
Yeah.
He's right that, you know, he shouldn't do this. This is what we got to do. Won't happen again. Puts everybody in line. And a lot of things went our way. But the reason they went our way, because between Doug Hamilton and Ray Hudson and, you know, Eric Eichmann and John Trask, you know, they had a great working relationship throughout the whole thing. Eric and John took care of the field stuff. Ray took care of the mental, just everything about it and everything else, picking players. I mean, from then, Ray, any player that Ray signed worked out for us.
Yeah.
I mean, he knows his players. So we had a lot of luck
in
that sense, but we made a lot of our luck. And it really started that the year before because we had a good U.S. Open Cup run. And that's what Ray said, listen, we're really going to push it. We can't do anything in the league, but we're really going to go. And we made the final.
Yeah.
So we lost to Chicago, but it's just one of those things. That really solidified, that Open Cup run solidified us to see, hey, if we tighten up a little bit, get a little more serious, we can do something.
Yeah. That's incredible.
You know, success. Yeah.
That's incredible. What was it like as we're starting to wind down the journey of this wonderful trip down memory lane of the Miami Fusion? Walk me through when you heard the official news of the contraction, post Supporters Shield. The playoffs were over. You'd gotten kicked out by MLS's own San Jose Earthquakes. What was your off season like? When did you find out about Miami?
Well, basically, we had heard rumors.
Right.
And then you come up to it and you kind of like, you know, we had the disappointing thing. If you look at the semifinals, we played in San Jose, complete shambles, red cards. Diego certainly got a red card in the game and he played the next game. So you figure that one out. What? They took the red card away. Yeah. You look at it, they took the red card away. He played the next. And it's just so many. Can you imagine if we won what they would have done? So, listen, you don't want to say conspiracy theories types of things, sure. But there's a lot of things that happened. And, you know, they kicked Ian Bishop out the second game, you know. Yeah. So it was all that kind of stuff. So while it was going through, we weren't sure. And so we ended up getting, I want to say, through the whole off season. I mean, they knew, but they never let us know. And then what happened was they had an expansion draft. So what they did was they called all the players of Tampa and Miami Fusion and a conference call. And we all had, Jim Rooney, you're on? Yeah, we're on. Okay, you know, and you know, all that stuff and both teams. And they told us that, look, we're going to have a dispersal draft. This was like on a Thursday.
Jeez.
And they said, we're going to have a dispersal draft. You're going to on the Friday. And so what ended up happening was they had the draft on the Friday, and then Friday, New England had picked me up, and Fernando Clavijo called me. Are you interested in coming? You know, before I sign you, and I was like, "Well, what's going?" You know, the whole thing, and we're like, "Okay, yeah, absolutely." And so, when he picked us, that we had to be there on a Sunday, so we had Saturday. This was for preseason, by the way.
Yeah.
So if we just had one day to know where we were going, Saturday, pack our gear and head out. So now that I think about it, it's a little easier to do that than to hear us all complaining. You know, we had no time to complain.
That's true.
Before I knew, we had four of our players in New England's locker room.
Yeah.
You know, so it was, listen, there was, I think it got to the point that, I mean, I've heard that they had a buyer for the Fusion.
Wow.
And they had it all set, but our owner wanted $20 million because what he put into, and we had a buyer for $15 million, and they got just so sick of him. They're just like, no, this ain't working. And then his mentor, he came in with, I forget who the guy was, for the New York guy, the first guy. That was his mentor, and he was out of the league. So then they just kind of got him out of the league, I guess, from there. So that's where the contraction thing. But we had 4 days of – we learned everything in an amount of 4 days. And before I know it, I was up in New England, and now we had to move from there. So was it fair? No. But, you know.
There's certain
things in business, I think, that, you know, players don't understand at the time. You know, looking back on it now, you know, listen, we're in the middle of it. Of course, you're going to be bitter. You know, you take away, you know, one of the greatest teams, and we were just starting.
Yeah.
And that's the shame of it all. As a Fusion player, you know, we just don't know what could have happened.
That's very true. And I do want to point out, you said that the owner wanted $20 million, had a buyer for $15 million. For context, folks, David Beckham paid $25 million for Inter Miami. So,
yeah.
Now, obviously, he paid that, or he had that locked-in price when he came into the league in 2007, because you couldn't get that much for an MLS franchise now. But it's just interesting, the dollars. Well, you left, you went, you played for the Revolution at that point. This has been an incredible trip down memory lane for the Miami Fusion, the 25th anniversary. I want to say, is there one final memory that you have that you want to share with folks about your time in Miami?
There's so many memories. And the one thing I will say, you know, we talked about Jeff Cassar a little bit, and I'll tell you a little bit of the story from his, you know, you'll get it from him, but talking to Ray, and he'll probably confirm it or not. But when Ray was going to figure out who's going to be the starters for our team, he told us all. He says, "Listen, I'm going to pick a starters, and you'll all have 4 games. I don't care what you guys do. Now's the time to work, get your thing going." And from the beginning of preseason to the end of preseason, those guys who are starting the first game, you're going to be starting in the first 4. So, as a player, you're like, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that. And Jeff Cassar and Nicky Raimondo in the goalkeeper battle. And obviously Nicky, he was phenomenal. He was great. The whole thing. So was Jeff. Yeah. Jeff was healthy. I mean, Jeff had horrendous injuries. He had screws in his knees and all that. He had to play, all that kind of stuff. And so he was doing really well the whole 9 yards. And it gets down to making that decision. And I remember Ray coming to me. He was, Ray was gutted. And he just said to them, he says, "You guys are playing so great together. I really don't know who to pick." And he says, "But," he says, "if whoever I pick, I'm doing an injustice to." And he says, and I know it. And he goes, "But I'm going to tell you," he says, "I'm just going to go by a gut feeling. I'm just going to pick Nicky on a gut feeling." And it was a gut feeling, but he was honest with him.
Yeah.
With that. And to me, those are the things, 25 years, I look back and, we lost Doug horrendously, and all the things that he did for us just as players, and keeping it before the success, there's other little battles to keep it going, and Doug did so much of that. I mean, it's incredible. And then when Ray came on board, both of them together, just being away from it now and seeing all those little pieces and, it's a big part of my life. But when you're going through it, you're a little like, "Oh, what, this is, why is this? Why is this?" And you see it now, what they've done. It's truly incredible. I mean, I'm still friends with, obviously with Facebook.
Right.
Our office staff, our team mom, Donna Cardoza. You mentioned that name to Jeff Cassar. We all called her Mama.
Yeah.
And she just took care. She took care of us like she was a mom away. We had that all.
Yeah.
At the Miami Fusion. We had unbelievable people working there behind the scenes. And a lot of people are still there. And, my thing is, it seems as it was deemed as a failure, but there were so many good, hardworking people there.
Yeah.
That it wasn't a failure, because if you say it's a failure, you're looking at what we did as a,
right.
It didn't exist. So just seeing, it was the time of our lives, and that was our lives at the time. We didn't know any better. We were trying to make the best of it. And looking back on it, the memory I have of just all those people, like going to the appearances and, seeing how it is. And now you see the stadium.
Yeah.
The stadium is where we trained.
Yeah.
And to see what it is now is absolutely incredible. We were basically, the best thing I can say about, we were old school players. We had a lot of old school players. And the time back then, I mean, many people have said to me that you couldn't play MLS now the way you tackled. And you see it now. It's totally different.
Right.
And I wonder now if some of the rules, VAR alone would have killed half the league.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Some of the players, but just, the time of our life, as it ended up failing, but it was no fault of the people that were involved.
Yeah.
They worked really hard. And like I said, you mentioned going to the
The Austin game.
The Cotton Bowl.
Or the Cotton Bowl,
think about this. One of my first games at the Cotton Bowl that people don't realize was at 1 o'clock in the afternoon for Telemundo. Now, you play a game at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Dallas in summer. Okay.
Forget it.
And I'm standing on the line. This is a true story. I'm standing at, and at the time, Ronaldo came out with the Brazilian Ronaldo
Right.
came out with with those special shoes, and they were patent leather right by the toe for grip, right? So I
Right.
had them. And I'm standing there, and the national anthem's going on, and it feels like my feet are on
Oh
fire.
my God.
That's how hot it is. You know that dry
Yep.
heat there.
Oh yeah.
And the aluminum bleachers just
Oh,
generating heat.
they were awful.
I mean, and people saying, oh, the level of play wasn't that good. Well, you try and run around at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Dallas
Right.
like that at a stadium, those are the things that it really is incredible when you see it now.
It
The
is.
differences, the players that we have to do. And listen, to me, it's great to see. It really is. I mean, it's become a proper league, and every player,
I
this
think,
is what we strive for.
yes, I think I like the way, I think we can end it with this of there's an old school team, but I think the team dynamic was a little ahead of its time for MLS. I don't know that MLS was ready for that style of play, but they got it, and now you're seeing it. And now, I mean, we
Yeah.
never, when this is out, people will know this and they'll go back and listen. But right now, all these rumblings about Messi coming to Miami, like, could you even imagine back with the Fusion, someone to the caliber of World Cup winner Lionel Messi coming and playing for Miami? It's incredible. Jim, thank you so much for taking this trip down memory lane with us. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks again.
No problem. 25 for 25 is a Detox Podcast production. Music production provided by KCWM on Spotify and YouTube. Recording, editing, post-production, and hosting has been completed by me, Joe Shaw. If you would like to follow along with this podcast, you can subscribe to it directly wherever you get your podcasts or by subscribing to the Detox Podcast feed. For more information about this and other Detox-produced podcasts, be sure to go to detoxpodcast.com. That's DetalksPodcast.com. And a special thanks to all those who took the time to share their story with me. If you want to continue to support this podcast, please share it with a friend and rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to it currently. Though Miami fans nowadays are decked in pink, I'll always bleed blue and yellow. Hashtag Fusion Forever.